Welcome back. I'm Julietta Tlevi. You're watching Stockwatch, and joining me in studio this evening are Wayne McCurry from FNB Wealth and Investments, as well as Rowan Williams from Nitrogen Fund Managers. If you'd like to send us questions, please do. You can SMS the question to 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Rowan, Wayne, nice to have you both this evening. Rowan, thanks for joining us and standing in for David tonight. Wayne, if I may start with you, it wasn't a bad day on the market for us.
In total,
a bad day for the Rand, though, and bad 2 days for the Rand, really.
Look, I mean, obviously, and we all know this, the first quarter GDP was a complete shocker. It was just a shocker. Everyone was expecting bad number, -1.5, -2. The worst expectation was -2.2, and it came in at -3.2. Now, before we go, just understand it'll probably be revised the next time they release, and it might go down to -2.8, but it doesn't matter. The next quarter will show a massive jump simply because you're measuring off a low base. So it doesn't look as though we're going to go into a technical recession, but let's come back. So you had that total and utter shocker, and the banks and the SA retailers took a pounding. Then today, this morning, the Rand strengthened quite nicely. It was looking okay. The shares were looking good. And then all of a sudden, we heard the quality easing story and attack on the reserve bank.
Quantity easing.
Quantity easing.
That you could think of.
Okay. And that doesn't help. Now, the Rand was clearly negatively affected by that. The banks weren't, surprisingly enough. The banks were actually slightly up. But the big news, truly, was the U.S. share market last night after the Federal Reserve Bank said, effectively, we're cutting interest rates. I mean, that was up to 2.5%. So a lot of the gain in our market was the weaker rand, but also the very positive overnight news about the Federal Reserve, which boosted really the big shares.
Yeah. Rowan, and then you had, if we're going to stick with the United States, you had an ADP, well, it used to be the ADP private employment report, the equivalent. It's changed somewhat. And it was quite weak, although, I mean, the U.S. is almost close to full employment. So, but it's being read as a negative, and people are saying that this is yet more cause for the Fed to cut rates. You know, so we were still talking, well, towards the end of last year, of rate hikes. Then it changed.
Yeah.
Now a series of rate cuts seem to be penciled in. Yeah, is that going to be sort of positive for markets in general, not just these?
Well, I think what you have seen is the sort of the power of the Fed rate outlook. On equity markets, and if there is any sort of murmurs about change in direction, expected cut, you see an immediate reaction from the markets, and they had been quite soft going into it, but quite a significant rebound. I mean, we've had a lot of trade issues, trade war, Mexico, Trump using trade as a sort of policy tool. Markets were getting very nervous, but I guess the Fed, as it has countless times, stepping in and kind of saving the day to some extent. So, but there are some concerns about the medium-term outlook for the U.S. economy and the potential that it could be slowing down. And I guess your point, the jobs figures that came out today, pointing to some weakness, which I think does strengthen the case and strengthens the Fed's hand, that they will act preemptively if they are see potential for a slowdown, that they will cut. And it looks like, yeah, up to 50 basis points, two cuts is now priced in before the end of the year.
Yeah. I mean, can anyone explain how this is linking to the gold price that we're seeing at the moment? Because a friend of mine was talking about it today, saying he's got single stock futures on AngloGold Ashanti, which were deep out of the money last week. This week, they've swung very, very positively in his favor. I mean, you know, you're not buying gold shares as a long-term investment, but as a sort of an in and out trade, that's not a bad move.
I mean, who knows
why
what
are they rallying
gold
to the extent that they are?
But trade wars and all this uncertainty caused by Donald Trump is clearly helping.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think there might be more to be had if you feel bold?
I wouldn't punt a gold share.
Look, really? It is a hedge for, I guess, difficult times and volatile times. And there always have been and will be gold bugs. And I guess lower interest rates do make the cost of holding gold, opportunity cost, lower, so it does make it more attractive. I think people are seeing a potential for an escalation of trade wars, more difficult economic environment, and it's a safe haven, and so people are going to it. We've also seen Bitcoin, which I consider kind of the new gold.
Yeah.
That's moved up significantly in the last 2 weeks, I think, also being used as sort of a safe haven in these difficult times.
There was actually a question a little bit earlier, and it's specifically to you, Wayne, although, I mean, Rowan, it's great to get your view as well, saying, please ask Wayne what he means when he refers to the rand being a structurally weak currency. Does this then imply that it's better to have more rand hedge equities in your portfolio?
Look, let's leave the equity side of it. Let's answer the structurally weak currency. The rand's been structurally weak forever, since it was established. I can remember when I started working, it shows my age, it cost you $1.35 to buy 1 rand. And guess where it is now? So, and it's weak for very good reasons. Ultimately, the reasons boil down to the competitiveness of our economy versus the rest of the world, for want of a better word. And that is really in the inflation rate. Now, the rate of weakness is slowing down over the years. Make no mistake, our inflation differences used to be double what they are now. So you would assume that the rand's weakness might be half in the next 20 years as what it's been in the previous 20 years. But it is a structurally weak currency because at the end of the day, we're just not as efficient as other major trading partners. Now, whether you would buy more rand hedge shares, a basket of rand hedge shares, yes, not just one or two rand hedges, because they could have individual problems like smoking in British American Tobacco, where you might not make it. But over time, you know, I still believe that over time, assets price for circumstances. So the simplest way of explaining that is to say, if you're worried about rand weakness, buy a US bond. But when you buy a US bond, you get 2% interest rate. When you buy an SA bond, you get 8% interest rate.
But you get,
and over time,
weakness.
The currency will probably weaken by 6%. So you're more or less in the same boat. Okay. In other words, asset prices tend to price themselves correctly for the variable circumstances. But make no mistake, over time, you want a significant proportion of your portfolio exposed to non-rand investments.
I mean, no, and that therein is also, there's differences of opinion of, as to what a significant proportion would be.
Yes.
Rowan, for you, would it be more than half?
Well, I guess you've got to think about yourself as a saver and your own personal circumstances. And do you have sort of rand liabilities? Are you going to be spending in rands? So you do need to hedge against that in terms of making sure that the purchasing power of your money and your savings is retained and grows over time. I guess there's sort of some element of event risk. We've seen the rand can be very fragile, typically when we're facing very difficult global economic crises. People flee from emerging markets, including the rand. It's very liquid, so it tends to feel the brunt of it. So I guess you're hedging against that sort of event risk as well. But yeah, I'd say there is that differential. You can expect lower returns from dollar assets than rand assets, just on a nominal basis, because of, as Wayne has described, things tend to price themselves accordingly. So maybe 30% to sort of hedge and diversify, because the bulk of most South African savers' sort of exposure is still in rand in terms of what they need to spend.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't overdo it, because you know the rand, by some sort of miracle, could strengthen, and
yes,
you could feel it on the other side. So it's not a one-way bet necessarily. So you don't want to overcook it.
No, but that's why you have a diversified portfolio. Remember, all of these things only work over the truly longer term. Remember, in 2002, rand hit 14. Against the dollar, it was going to 20. Everyone was jumping off buildings. You know, the next stop was 650. And it only went back to 14. Was it, how long? 20 years? 14 years later?
Yeah, well, it was 2015, wasn't it?
Yeah, so it's 14, 13, 13, 14. Yeah, years later, it got back to that same exchange rate. So remember, these things work over long, long time periods.
Yeah, okay. All right, moving back to stocks from currencies. And there's a question on Capitec, and I've been seeing on Twitter a couple of people, there's quite a lot of chatter about shorting Capitec. And there were, the argument was that Capitec is looking slightly weak at the moment in comparison to, it's had this phenomenal rally, okay? Yeah. But the other banks have been holding their own, whereas Capitec seems to be turning now. Someone describes shorting Capitec as shooting fish in a barrel, although if you'd been short Capitec last year, that wouldn't have felt like it.
It would have been the fish. Yeah.
But the question is, please ask the panel their view on shorting Capitec. Based on quite a rich valuation, it's tied to a poor South African economic environment and a director with a big nominal amount of put options below 970 Rand. Additionally, their thoughts on investing in hydrogen fuel cell manufacturers as a long-term theme. Okay, so that's separate. But Capitec, I mean, if you have a director with put options below 970
Rand... That's normally in some sort of structure related to their staff share scheme and the loans attached to those shares.
But we have seen hideous cratering of shares
when
directors have taken leveraged positions and the the price starts going against them and then they become forced sellers, which just makes it
worse. Let's maybe go one step back now and say... shares ultimately are driven by earnings, ultimately. And there's nothing wrong with Capitec's earnings. The classic short is a catastrophe like Tongaat's or a catastrophe like where something has fundamentally gone wrong with the company's ability to generate earnings. Sappi a couple of years ago, you name it, there's been a few classic shorts that everyone jumps on and you short it. So if you do short Capitec now, you're only shorting it because it might be an overvaluation of a good earnings stream. To me, that's not a classic short. The share price might fall. I don't know. It could fall.
Yeah.
But it's not going to halve and halve and halve again, simply because there's nothing wrong with the underlying earnings structure of the company. The share might be overpriced, but it's not, to me, a classic short.
Yeah. And Rowan, your thought about these put options and what happens if the share price heads towards 970 Rand or below?
Yes.
What then does that
precipitate? So it can trigger liquidity type events that you see the share sort of getting into perpetuating cycle. There's selling, there's momentum selling. It drives the share down. It hits certain strikes of put options that creates more forced selling. And we've seen it with some of the sort of disasters that have happened. EOH comes to mind, obviously. But I tend to concur with Wayne that it's a valuation-driven story in terms of the earnings are there. Maybe the competitive environment is getting a little bit more intense with all these new entrants. But it doesn't necessarily mean, there's something structurally wrong that it will get into that sort of cycle of continued selling. So it could hit that strike, but it also you have to look at that as a percentage of the daily volume and understand a little bit more to see if it, if it's a sort of event-driven type of risk that you may be exposed to.
I mean, I suppose the other thing is, yes, the South African economy is weak and Capitec does have the micro-lending part of their business, but they've also got... people migrating to Capitec from the bigger banks because of cheaper fees. Although, then you might see that maybe people are going to start going to Time Bank or Bank Zero or Discovery. I don't know about Discovery Bank.
The Time Bank, Bank Zero, Discovery Bank, I mean, they may have a profound impact on the banking market, but they're not going to do it in the next 6 months to a year. Not a sausage. Not a sausage.
Okay.
So as I said, there might be a profound impact over 3 years, but Capitec's not going to suffer because of these entrants in the next 6 months to a year.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. We'll leave it there for the moment, and we'll pick up perhaps very briefly and get to other questions after the break. And if you'd like to send those questions to us, please SMS us 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to U.S. markets this evening. After a very strong evening last night, the S&P 500 up 0.2%. Today, the Nasdaq up 0.5%, and the Dow Jones 0.75% to the good. So Monday was terrible, but the last couple of trading sessions have been pretty positive. And across the Atlantic, the FTSE 100 gaining 0.8% today, the CAC up 0.5%, and the DAX up 0.8%. Still with me in studio are Wayne McCurry and Rowan Williams. Do you feel that Monday, because Monday seemed a bit hairy, well, Friday and Monday, the tech stocks dragged us all lower. Is that now out of the system and we march higher once again on U.S. stock markets?
You must understand the economy is not driving the stock market higher. Even though the economy is not in trouble, world economic growth, the growth rate is clearly and decisively going down. And in the U.S., a lot of the, let's call it leading indicators, have gone from expansion to neutral. So the underlying economy is getting slightly worse. So what's driving it now is interest rates and the prospect of lower interest rates.
Yeah, okay. Rowan, we were talking about Capitec. I think we have maybe exhausted the Capitec conversation, but the other question from our viewer was on thoughts of investing in hydrogen fuel cell manufacturers as a long-term theme.
Yeah, so I guess there are potentials for new energy-driven technologies, and hydrogen fuel cells is one of them. So I think what you need to understand with these speculative technologies is it's sort of more boom and bust. It may become mainstream in terms of driving motor vehicles, but it could be an alternative technology. Maybe it's battery-driven technology, which does seem to be all the rage. So you'd have to do your homework, and if you were to invest, I think you'd also have to take a portfolio approach, not an individual play in that sector across a number of, because you're going to get winners and losers, but also realize it is highly speculative. So a small portion of your portfolio that you're happy to risk that you could lose maybe 50 or more percent of for a payoff if that's what you're interested in.
And can I just ask, when you talk about a portfolio approach, do you mean as a small portion in your overall portfolio, or you take maybe five shares in the sector and hopefully one of them turns out to be your big hitter if the others fall by the wayside?
Sure. I mean, today Google is Google, but 15 years ago, there was sort of, Yahoo, Google,
exactly.
There were some others
AOL.
That may have been what Google is today. So you would have taken a bit of each, and yes, you wouldn't have sort of got the lottery ticket per se, but you've spread your bets and still get a very good return if you are right.
Wayne, does it entice you, or alternative energy? Or?
This is coming. It might take significantly longer than what a lot of people say. Generally, new technology has a significantly bigger influence than what everyone predicts at the time, but takes significantly longer to arrive. So it normally is far bigger than what people envisage today, but it takes three times longer to actually happen.
Yeah.
Okay. But so there's no clear sign yet that hydrogen fuel cells is the winner. I mean, I went to a presentation the other day where vanadium-powered batteries are going to be the winner. You know, there's no clear winner yet. So I agree with around 100. Small amount, spread your risk. Buy hydrogen, buy some solar, buy some battery, buy some vanadium, buy some whatever in that.
Okay, so your alternative
no clear
energy
yet.
A section to your portfolio.
Yeah.
But have it. Yes, okay. Moving on. There are a couple of questions on Telkom tonight. Thoughts on generally on Telkom, and also the other viewer says, I own some Telkom shares. Is it worth selling at this level, or has it still got room to the upside? Rowan, what do you think? I mean, because it's been a stupendous performance.
Yeah, so I think it's up over 50% year to date. I mean, this is a fixed line, transitioning to mobile, and I guess fiber to the home technologies. But in terms of the valuation, I guess, relative to the prospects, from our perspective, it looks very full. In terms of discounting future, I think what you do need to look at, the earnings looked quite good on paper, but if you look at the cash conversion, that was particularly poor, in fact. Mm-hmm. There were quite a few accounting once-offs in terms of driving the results as well. And even though they are getting a lot of penetration in the mobile, and that is growing, they're still a very small player. They won't be immune to sort of the competitive threats and some issues, for example, around using Huawei gear or whatever in your network. So those are some issues. So it looks to me very full. I would, if I had some, it would be a pretty good time to be selling.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder what the government is thinking, because they've got a stake in Telkom. If they need cash, although maybe
cash.
They're thinking...
Well, we know they need cash, just are they going to sell Telkom?
Yeah.
Look,
I mean, can that actually cause a bit of a pressure on the share price?
They'll normally do it in a basket sale to someone that won't even touch the market. Such a big sale. But, I mean, Telkom management must be congratulated for what they've done in a very challenging environment. However, they're not making money on cell phones. They're too small. You actually can't compete if you're that small. Your capital expenditure is just too massive for your customer base. And at the end of the day, all you're competing on, I mean, they even had to tie up with the big networks to get proper coverage, because they couldn't provide coverage for themselves, neither could Cell C. So they had to become business partners with the big networks, because they couldn't roll out 4G, let alone roll out 5G, and give you proper network. It's just too expensive CapEx-wise let's call it technology-wise, too expensive for the smaller players. You actually, it's actually not a winning business model, quite frankly. So it's extremely tough.
Yeah.
So I would sell, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, and if you've done a 50% return, I mean, it depends on where you bought them. I mean, if you'd bought right in the
Look, it's had tough years,
early stage, yeah.
Telcom's had tough years.
But if you'd bought at its worst levels, you'd be absolutely smiling. But then I suppose, what do you do with the cash once you've freed it up?
Well, we'll give you some ideas.
Okay, all right. Well, we shall, yes. I'm not quite there yet. Coming, a couple of other questions. Sorry, getting back to the emails. There's a question on AVI. So we've seen pretty weak results coming out of the primary food producers. Would you buy AVI at these levels?
Yes, I would. The share prices come under a bit of pressure, as we all know, as of all consumer stocks, but this is still fundamentally a really good business. They've got the two sides of the business. They've got the, let's call it the fashion side, which is shoes, and they've got the Snackworks, which is doing actually quite well. They just announced they closing the Green Cross shoe, and they just can't compete cost-wise with imports anymore, and that's been a strain on their business for a while. The Spit is still doing quite well. And you're buying it now at a rating, at a price earnings that you haven't seen for a long time in this year. So yes, I would buy some now. Of course, we all hope that the SA economy gets better. If it doesn't get better, share prices, like all others, will carry on going down.
Yeah. Rowan, I mean, you know, this is the conundrum, isn't it?
Well, we actually, we're quite circumspect of the branded consumer goods groups because of the pressure that we're seeing on the consumer. As Wayne mentioned, they've got exposure to fashion retail, which I think is going to struggle. We've seen even the likes of Mr. Price not producing stellar numbers, and they are a defensive type of retailer. So I think high-end fashion may feel the pinch even further. And consumers that are feeling the pressure are switching out of branded consumers into unbranded. So, shop
sort of
brands,
white
yes,
label,
exactly.
Like
no name brands, exactly. And those offerings of those retailers, the food retailers, has actually improved quite substantially. So I think there is a lot more competition. We have seen Tiger Brands, Pioneer come with weak numbers. I can't see how AVI is going to get away from that. There are also fishing quota issues with I&J. So there are quite a few risks on the horizon from our perspective.
Yeah. But it's interesting about this branded consumer thing. I went to a presentation by one of the biggest companies in this area. And they say high LSM, i.e. rich people, are going down. But they say the bottom LSMs still buy the branded product. They're not going down. And this is the true story, is that they will still buy Baker's biscuits, for example. Because if they buy the no-name brand and they don't like it and it's horrible, they've got them. They can't just go and buy a Baker's biscuit. So that when they buy their tin of beans, that's their tin of beans. And they want to know the quality is good and I'm buying the product and I know what it is. Because if that's bad and I don't like it, I can't just throw that away and go and buy another tin of beans. So they actually say that the low LSMs are not swapping out of the brand. Surprisingly enough, they are the ones who are actually sticking to the bandit because they know I can only afford this one item or these three items. I must be assured that it's quality.
And the irony, of course, is that these food producers actually produce for the white label, but just at slightly lower margins. But I remember in the Pick and Pay results presentation, I think it was the white label stuff was, 21% of their product? And Richard Brasher, who used to be for Tesco, said when he was at Tesco, it was closer to 40%, I think. But the comment that he made was he loves brands. Because brands also sell, so you know it's not a gimme that it's all over.
But Pick and Pay said they want to increase it to over 30% as an example. So I mean, where's that share going to come from? I don't think the consumer's going to be buying more things. Yeah. So there's going to be some switching.
No, but it's actually interesting. Yeah. A couple of people went on a tour through the spaza shops. They went to I don't know how many spaza shops, and they say you go into a spaza shop, it's branded goods on the shelves. It's not no names. It's branded.
Yeah, interesting. All right, well, moving on to stock picks. So if you were going to be picking up a few shares at this stage of the game, Wayne, what would you be buying?
I'll stick to the old theme, South Africa can't get any worse, and then it just gets worse. And if I said the same thing a month ago and two
Wait
months ago and 3 months
Venezuela.
Ago, and you'll stick to it until eventually you write your hope. And so I'll go for the SA retailer and pick ShopRite. Why not? Same arguments. It's the same time. It's looking cheap. The economy's at the bottom. It can turn around.
And at least they're not going to be buying back Christo Wiese's deferred shares.
So it's the same
thing. $3.5 billion, right?
It's the same thing. Things can't get any worse, so they'll get better.
Okay. Rowan, what are you looking at?
From the Rand bull to the Rand bear, I mean, we have seen, just I think highlighting the movements in the Rand and some of the utterances that I think are moving the Rand, that it is a risk, and we did speak about having foreign shares in your portfolio. So I think it is worth looking for some cheaper shares right now. We like Reynet. It does have a large exposure to British American Tobacco, but that has reduced significantly from what it was. It is a more diversified portfolio, some exposure to Pence Corp and the private equity assets. Looks like they're getting the portfolio in order as well, cleaning it up, doing share buybacks, doing the right things. So it still trades at a deep discount to NAV, and I think that discount can narrow.
What is the discount to NAV at the moment?
It's around 40%, okay. So it's very substantial.
Pretty much at the highest it's been
in
its history.
Yes, the widest it's been, that's right.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Rowan, Wayne, thanks very much for joining us this evening. We'll leave it there. Wayne McCurry is from F&B Wealth and Investments. Rowan Williams is from Nitrogen Fund Managers, and we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening. Moving on to stock picks, so if you were going to be picking up a few shares at this stage of the game, Wayne, what would you be
I'll
buying?
I'll stick to the old theme, South Africa can't get any worse, and then it just gets worse. And if I said the same thing a month ago, and three months ago, and you'll stick to it until eventually you're right, you hope. And so I'll go for the SA retailer and pick ShopRite, why not? Same arguments, it's the same time, it's looking cheap, the economy's at the bottom, it can turn around.
And at least they're not going to be buying back Christo Wiese's deferred shares.
So it's the same thing.
$3.5 billion, right?
It's the same thing. Things can't get any worse, so they'll get better.
Okay. Rowan, what are you looking at?
From the Rand bull to the Rand bear, I mean, we have seen, just I think highlighting the movements in the Rand and some of the utterances that I think are moving the Rand, that it is a risk, and we did speak about having foreign shares in your portfolio. So I think it is worth looking for some cheaper shares right now. We like Reynet. It does have a large exposure to British American Tobacco, but that has reduced significantly from what it was. It is a more diversified portfolio, some exposure to Pence Corp and the private equity assets. Looks like they're getting the portfolio in order as well, cleaning it up, doing share buybacks, doing the right things. So it still trades at a deep discount to NAV, and I think that discount can narrow.
What is the discount to NAV at the moment?
It's around 40%, okay. So it's very substantial.
Pretty much at the highest it's been
in
its history.
Yes, the widest it's been, that's right.
Okay. All right, Rowan, Wayne, thanks very much for joining us this evening. We'll leave it there. Wayne McCurry is from F&B Wealth and Investments. Rowan Williams is from Nitrogen Fund Managers, and we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening.